Turkey Creek rushes through KCK over by Southwest Boulevard and has a scenic moment in Merriam's Waterfall Park. People commute and do business near Turkey Creek every day. But when an artist stopped to talk to them about it, many admitted to not even knowing it was there. How is that possible? I'm Gina Kaufman. Today on Central Standard, we're looking at art projects aimed at drawing our attention to the bodies of water right around us. Starting with the basic question of why we don't notice them on our own. That's coming up after this news. It's a hot weekday afternoon at Berkeley Riverfront Park. The wind blows through trees and the milk chocolate river rushes under bridges. You can count on one hand the number of people who are in the park, like Evie Sands, who comes here every single day to run.
I like the curves. I like that it has that long strip. I like being around the river. There's days where it feels really nice and breezy around here and it's really hot in other areas.
Evie says people in KC don't seem to know the river is right in their backyard, but she says it's perfect for loners like her.
I like love being around the water. I don't know what it is about the water, but it just makes me feel good.
I'm Gina Kaufman, and I love so many things about that riverfront park. I love the walk from the city market, the stairs down to the riverbed, where a giant ruler measures rising water levels. I love the lampposts and the way it feels just after 5 when all the neighborhood professionals are out walking dogs. But for some reason, it doesn't quite feel like Kansas City to me, even though this is a city built on a river. Why is that? Today on Central Standard, we're looking at the waterways of Kansas City with new eyes. We've got an artist in the studio to help us get started, Timothy Amundson. Good morning.
Good morning.
You've got a project called the Turkey Creek Institute for Phenomenal Awareness. What is that?
It's a project that I've started and am in the process of kind of researching Turkey Creek, mostly through being there, also looking at what library archives there are, but spending a lot of time at Turkey Creek, taking photographs, looking at it under different conditions, trying to tune into both phenomenological kind of conditions and...
Can you define that term?
Just in terms of like light, space... what's there in the environment, what's going on, what your senses can tune into. And now I've really kind of also expanded to start thinking about Turkey Creek historically, culturally, socioeconomically, looking at how a creek came to be the way Turkey Creek is, which I think it's not unique, but it's still very interesting to me.
When you say how Turkey Creek is, how would you say Turkey Creek is?
It's very... influenced by humans. There's railroads that run along the banks of the creek. There's a highway that runs above it that kind of jumps back and forth between the bluffs that Turkey Creek's created over the millennia and is crossed multiple times. When you drive out on I-35 South, you're on top of Turkey Creek. If you're leaving downtown and you're headed out towards Overland Park, Shawnee, that area, you're above Turkey Creek the whole time, and it's kind of designed in such a way that you might not even know you're above it.
But when you say it's influenced by humans, can you describe what you mean by that?
There's many different flood control measures. But there's also this huge floodplain that's covered in parking lots. There's that area, because the highway was built, it was so easy to build a highway there. That they then along with it came tons of residential areas and tons of these commercial areas like all your IKEAs and your malls and whatnot. And so there's a big, huge runoff of water from all the parking lots and then all of these flood control measures. So it's a creek bed that doesn't look much like one that might be in a forest somewhere. It looks very much like it's in a city. It's covered in concrete and things like that.
When did you become interested in Turkey Creek in particular? How did this specific body of water capture your attention?
I started by realizing that there was a low point, a kind of a floodplain in the West Bottoms that seemed strange to me that there wasn't necessarily water there, because water generally goes downhill. Not generally, actually, absolutely all the time will run downhill. And so I started to realize like there was something strange, and so I went looking for why the stream doesn't go, you know, downhill, and I found this big diversion tunnel, which is kind of underneath I-35 near the Rainbow exit, and it was just miraculous to me, this huge, like huge thing that somebody built back in 1918 to divert a stream and change the course of this history of a stream that had been there for a million years, you know, and now all of a sudden humans were able to change that. So it started me, and I had recently heard about this concept of the Anthropocene and humans affecting the environment, and it was just like, oh, here's this really incredible example of that, and I just kind of became obsessed.
So tell me more about the obsession. I mean, what are some, tell me about some of the photographs that you've taken.
The more time I've spent down there, I've realized like sometimes the photographs aren't really of much. It might be of a piece of trash or of some kind of culvert or a swale or something that I'm just seeing. But it's been the attention of being there and just kind of having that phenomenal awareness, just like opening my senses up and being there and trying to tune into the creek and see what I can learn from it that day. But there's just all sorts of things that unless you take the time to spend down there, you just pass right over, like literally on the highway, you just pass over it. So
what did the experience of spending time around Turkey Creek and looking at it closely with your camera, what did it mean to you? I mean, did it change your relationship with the city?
Yeah, it's changed my relationship with understanding how people behave as a larger organism. Realizing that our time scale, if you kind of look at human time scale extended, we move as a species and spread out along the landscape in the same way other species might, like plants or, you know, bacteria or anything like that. And so you can start to see how something like a stream can become this place where humans can progress along and develop in the way they have. And so there's all of these various histories of that progression that are still evident to some degree. So it's definitely turned me on to understanding this kind of deeper history of man and the landscape, and just also led me to question, like, how did we get to this point as a culture and as people, and like, you know, what processes have gone on, especially environmentally, to lead us to the places that we are.
Why do you think people don't notice Turkey Creek? I mean, other than, is it purely infrastructure or is it something bigger?
I think that infrastructure enables something bigger. I think that there was like a necessity to be near water. Water was the highway for so long, and water, being close to running water, was very important for easy access to clothes washing and drinking and agriculture. And because of technology and the way it's developed, there's not necessarily a need to go to the water. In fact, most of the technology that's being implemented around there is a ways to avoid the water, to get over it or to shed it and get it to the river as fast as you can so that we avoid flooding. And
that is what a lot of people probably, if they do know of Turkey Creek, that's the association.
Yeah, Turkey Creek has been a culprit for so long. I mean, it had such a huge play in the 1951 flood. It also wiped out the first settlers in the West Bottoms, the French settlers, way back in the 1800s. And, you know, in 93, of course, like, caused a lot of damage. But people were there along the creek for a reason, and then the creek does what it does. You know, it's always going to flood. And there are these kind of amazing new implements. They're really just mind-boggling to see how much they can control the water. And I've had a chance with the recent flooding to see some of these implements in action, and it's pretty remarkable how they're able to move the water. But I think there's always going to be that chance for flood. And they talk about the, you know, the 30-year flood or the design flood, that these things are built to try to withstand. But it's like there's a certain degree where there's always going to be that uncertainty.
What about on an emotional level? Is there something that this connection to the water that you've explored over time with Turkey Creek has tapped into, like, within you?
Yeah, a big part of that, for me, I mean, it brings me back to time. I grew up in the country, so it brings me back to certain things about going trout fishing with my brother when I was growing up and things like that. But it, I think it's there for everybody in different capacities. And I've spent a lot of time bringing people to the stream, and, like, there's something that comes up for people, especially I've noticed at waterfalls. There's like 4 or 5 waterfalls along Turkey Creek. And if you take somebody to a waterfall, it doesn't matter that you can still hear the highway. And it doesn't matter that you it kind of smells funny. It's like there's something about a waterfall that gets into, I don't know if it's spiritual or emotional or what it is, but there's something unspoken that kind of gets stirred up by seeing waterfall over rocks. And it's such a simple thing, but you can't quite remove the beauty from it.
What about you? Have you had an experience that changed the way you think about Kansas City's waterways? Call 816-235-2888 and share those insights. We'd love to hear that story. 816-235-2888. I want to move on to our next guest in just a second, but I have one question for you, which is that some people might be hearing this and thinking, so what if I don't notice Turkey Creek? So what if I don't notice waterways? Who really cares? How would you respond to that?
I think that, I mean, it's not necessary for like economic life, but I think that it might be necessary for spiritual life. I know that I'm not going to get into it too much, but there's like a Joseph Campbell bit about this where he talks about going to the river being the most important part of the human kind of myth. It's like throughout all of time, people go to the river, and I just think about that. It's like, you don't have to go to the, he kind of says like, you don't have to go to the Tigris or the Euphrates or whatever holy river. It's like, you can go to the Hudson. So he lived in New York. And I think you can go to Turkey Creek, or you could definitely go to the Missouri or the Kaw, and like something will happen. I think being by water and watching the sky. And I think, yeah, I just think it's important.
Let's talk now with Don Wilkeson, a hydrologist and scientist emeritus for the U.S. Geological Survey. Hi, Don.
Hello. Thank you.
You know, I've previously known you under your pseudonym. Will you please share?
MOI. It stands for the Minister of Information. That's my art pseudonym. So I kind of wear two hats. I'm a scientist who looks at water quality in both urban and agricultural environments. In that practice, what I've really focused on is how I can sort of connect people to the resource in ways, like how can I show them? How can I sort of reveal this sort of deeper understanding that I think Tim talks about on one sense? Like it's very meaningful to go to water bodies and to be in water bodies. And as a hydrologist, I'm very fortunate to be able to stand in streams sometimes and actually get paid to do that. I also have to stand out sometimes in the rain. We have a saying, no rain, no river. but still, I'm interested in how I can sort of, and by that, how would I go about doing that? So one of the things that I did, I looked at water quality in Kansas City, the Brush Creek, which is just right outside the door. So, you know, when we try to get people to connect to the resource, they often say, well, I can't understand that. And I'm like, well, do you drink the water? Do you make coffee? Do you drink coffee? And if I can show them that some of those, do you take antibiotics, for instance? Do you wash your hands with antimicrobials? If we can demonstrate that we can find those in the water, then maybe they can begin to understand that they're actually part of this process. They're part of nature. They're not sort of on the outside of nature. We're embedded in nature. And I think one of the that Tim was talking about, and I think this speaks to a lot of rivers, is that the one reason that people can't necessarily see them is because we've sort of shifted a focus away from the river as a conduit for moving people and moving things and gone to highways. And so they're intimately connected, though. I mean, that's the thing. If you drive a car, you're having an influence on the quality of the water that you may see in our rivers. And so, and not just the small streams. I mean, they're all connected. I mean, that's another thing that I think I've tried to do is how can I connect people from one place to another?
It does seem sort of bizarre that this would be an issue for us, this idea that we can't see things that are right in front of us, like large things, you know, like rivers.
I think we tend not to see them until there's a large event, a flood event. Flood events tend to make people sort of pay attention. And often it's because we've done things that we probably shouldn't have done. I mean, if you sort of develop a geography like Kansas City based on proximity to a river, and if you look at sort of population maps, how cities sort of develop, they're all built along water bodies. Now, if you look at that, they're all built along highway connectivity. So we tend to have a lot of very expensive infrastructure next to a lot of water bodies. And if there's a flood event or something, a spill or something that raises people awareness of that this our shortage of water. I mean, in our region, we tend not to necessarily understand that many parts of the country do not have enough water. And so we tend to not necessarily focus on issues that you might focus on if you're in the Southwest or on the coast. Unless there's a drought, or unless climate change might alter the way in which the environment is going to respond.
You know, I'm curious about how many rivers and tributaries and creeks run through Kansas City. Do you have numbers or just vague estimates on that?
Well, you know, you've got the Missouri River, you've got Brush Creek, you've got Turkey Creek, you've got Shoal Creek, you've got a bunch of sort of named tributaries, Tomahawk Creek, Indian Creek, and then you've got sort of innumerable. I mean, if you follow a stream up to its sort of endpoint, at some point you're going to begin to branch off into what now has become a parking lot and used to be sort of the headwaters of a stream. So there's sort of, you know, the whole landscape really should be thought of as being connected to streams and rivers, because they are. And I think that's something that people tend to forget. And as an example of that is what they might put on their lawns or how we might produce food or feedstuffs. We tend to maybe not make the kind of connections to understand that everything that we're doing in this landscape ultimately sort of goes into a water body, which then goes into another water body that somebody else is relying on. Half of the people in the state of Missouri rely on the Missouri River or its alluvial aquifer for drinking water. So you would think that they would have a good understanding of that resource and really sort of, and I think a lot of people do value it and understand it.
But maybe just don't see that when they're either walking or more likely driving by.
Well, I think it's a matter of, you know, there are people I think who really understand it and participate in it and
participate how?
Well, they recreate around it. They might be on the river. They go to the river. I mean, I do the same thing. If I haven't had a chance to be on a river, I'm going to bike down to the Missouri River and I'm going to look at it.
Can you tell me really specifically as a scientist what's at stake with our bodies of water that travel through Kansas City right now?
Isn't everything at stake on one level? Our sort of way of life, our infrastructure, there's a lot of businesses that rely on that. Our mental health, I think there's a lot at stake. There's the potential to connect with other communities in a better, more robust way than we're doing right now, I think. I think there's also the potential to sort of deeper understand ourselves and how we relate and how we become part of the landscape as a whole.
Is there a specific sort of shift happening with one of these rivers, with the water quality in it or the life around it, that you could point to and let people know this is happening right now?
Well, one of the things that I most recently looked at was the sort of water quality of northern Missouri streams over about 25 years and how agricultural practices may have changed the quality of water, primarily as it relates to excessive nutrients and how those can contribute to Gulf hypoxia. And what we've seen is that there's a couple of essential nutrients that are applied. One is nitrogen. That appears to be sort of flattening and have plateaued over the last decade. But phosphorus, which is applied to agricultural fields, but is also a byproduct of growing animals, has increased. And what we see is that the trends in phosphorus in the rivers in northern Missouri has increased over this last two decades. Now, it appears that maybe we're doing a better job of understanding this and things might be flattening, but I don't think we really know the answer to that.
Back to your role as an artist, I hear that you had a project recently, almost a performance piece in response to the city's fountains being dyed blue during the Royals World Series run. Can you tell us about that?
So as part of my art practice, I do what I call public interventions, where I try to do work in public and kind of unexpected places and take advantage of opportunities in the community that might allow me to speak about larger issues. And so the Royals were in the World Series. People were very excited about that. And then our fountains, as a lot of people might know, are in considerable disrepair and need some infrastructure improvements. One thing that people might not know is that we use potable water, the same water that you drink that goes in our fountains. Now, in Kansas City, we can maybe get away with that because we have a lot of water. But in other parts of the country, you would never do that. But it also costs money to do that. The city, most cities, municipalities spend about a third of their energy budget treating water, either for drinking or for wastewater. So what happens to that water is it goes into the fountain, and then it leaks. That's why we need to fix them. Then it goes into the sewer system, then has to be sort of cleaned up again. So when you put blue dye in this potable drinking water, it immediately becomes non-potable, means you can't drink it. So I was interested in sort of playing around with that notion because the mayor at the time was trying to sell bottles, blue plastic bottles of dyed blue fountain water to sort of raise awareness. And I sort of, as my friend Vicky is here, knows plastic bottles end up in rivers a lot. So it didn't make a lot of sense to me. I mean, it makes a lot of sense to try to make people aware of issues with infrastructure, but maybe the way that we're going about it is a little different. So I set up these scenarios and then I ask people to respond to that, and then we can talk about deeper issues about what's happening or what's underlying that.
How did people respond?
I think people, well, it was a sort of joyous time for people because it was dyed blue. It's sort of this memento of the World Series, but it's also it's sort of something that's free. And it's sort of, I think people, they seem to really respond positively to it and enjoy it. Though sometimes there are interventions of public interventions. So, I work in the public, so I understand this. So sometimes I have to sort of negotiate with the powers that be that I'm actually legally able to do these kinds of things. So there was a little bit of that. But in all, I think people responded publicly or positively.
Don, Timothy, I want you both to help me understand something, and we'll be moving on in talking to another guest shortly, but there are so many artists trying to make us see and notice bodies of water. You've got Lisa Grossman flying over the Kansas River, photographing its twists and turns, translating them into watercolors. You've got Maya Lin's recycled silver Missouri River on the wall of the Block building, looking abstract or like a bulging silver vein. What's going on here? What do you think is the larger thing going on?
I think that I'd like to think that ecology is becoming cool again. And I think it has to. I think that there were a lot of great strides that were made after the 70s, and there was a lot of momentum that happened that stopped a lot of the digression of the environmental state. And I think, I mean, geez, like DDT just got allowed by the EPA, I guess. And it's like, we have to stay on board. And so I think it's not so much like people need to stand up and, you know, fight for a total collapse or anything. I just think, like, let's hang out in the environment and not get lost in the digital milieu. And yeah,
I might just make, I'd like to take a, if you don't mind, a little exception with the Maya Lin piece about the Missouri River, because I think that's an example of art that doesn't really do service to the river. And by that I mean, it doesn't do service to the tributaries. It only does some service to the main stem. And rivers are vital in dynamic systems. And you know, some of this is my personal opinion. The choice of the materials doesn't really make any sense for the river. I think there's much, I think Lisa's work is a lot more interesting. I think Tim's work is a lot more interesting. But if you want to really see, in my opinion, really interesting sort of contemporary artwork that deals with the river, is you should go to the roof of Healthy Rivers Partnership and look at this sort of collaborative community space that was created from what was there. And I think that's a really great thing.
When Central Standard returns, we'll hear more about just that. We'll be talking to a woman who helps high school students make their own art depicting the Missouri River, and we'll get to your calls. Tell us about your experiences with bodies of water in Kansas City. Do you see the city differently because of those encounters? 816-235-2888. We'll be right back. I'm Gina Kaufman, and this is Central Standard. We're talking about why we don't notice the waterways in our city. Our lens for looking at that question today is art, but we'd love to hear from artists and non-artists alike. Our guests so far have been Timothy Amundsen, who's exploring Turkey Creek through photography, and scientist Don Wilkeson, who's worked with Kansas City's rivers on many levels, including artistic. Now let's talk with Vicki Richmond. She's here from the Healthy Rivers Partnership. Vicki, tell me about yourself and your relationship with water.
Well, thanks for having me. I've been enjoying the rest of the conversation. My personal relationship with water started when I was a little kid, and I don't think I can remove myself from that. I started in a professional way in the 90s doing river cleanups and got really involved with those types of efforts. And that brings us 20 some odd years later to where we are today with Healthy Rivers Partnership.
How did the Healthy Rivers Partnership come into the picture for you?
Well, Healthy Rivers really grew out of what we saw as a need here in Kansas City to not only pay attention to the rivers themselves, the way that Don does with studying them or what scientists do, but to take the everyday citizen and figure out a way to connect them back to the river and then connect that river back to the community. So Healthy Rivers does a ton of different types of projects. We do river cleanups, we do education programs, festivals, but something that we've explored over the last several years is reaching folks through art. And that has just been a real eye-opener for us.
Before we get back to the art, I'm curious about how you think most people in Kansas City do relate to the Missouri River or do think about it.
Truthfully, Gina, I don't think they do.
Not even like as a political boundary?
Well, it's a divider for our city. I definitely see that. We divide it Northland to downtown. It divides Kansas and Missouri. It divides communities. It divides a lot. So I think we also drive over it. I don't think people spend a great deal of time looking down, seeing what's below them. The Lewis and Clark anniversary really brought some attention to the rivers here in Kansas City. We made improvements at Kaw Point Park, at Riverfront Park. Berkeley Park is a great asset to our community. That's in charge of the Port KC folks, and they've done some great things there. So I think there's ways to get people connected. We just have to continue to find unique ways to do that.
You've been working with high school students to create art about the Missouri River. Tell me about that.
Well, this started about 5 years ago when an art teacher from Shawnee Mission East, Adam Finkelston, approached me about taking students out on a field experience. We were going to pair them with working artists. So those were engineers and architects and writers and scientists. Don was one of our artists early on. And so we paired those folks together and took them out on the river and pretty much had an agenda for how the day was going to go, but with all flexibility built in. So if a student wanted to go take a picture of that or wanted to go collect this, we were able to do that. They then came back to the school, created art in partnership with the artists that they were paired with, and then had a couple of really well-received shows. Our company, Healthy Rivers, moved into a very large warehouse space in the West Bottoms. 815 Woods Weather Road, right on the banks of Old Turkey Creek, which isn't there anymore, but it's where we were, where we are. And so we took students in, and they saw this huge cavernous space. And so a piece that was going to be a 4-inch by 6-inch print became a 4-foot by 6-foot print. So really saw those kids get take up the space they were given. It was great to see. And then the interpretations that they bring back of their day are so different. They're not my experience. They wouldn't be yours.
Is there anything you've heard that just totally surprised you and made you see something that even with all your experience, you had never noticed before?
I think one of my favorite moments with that program was a young woman several years ago who was drawing in the sand. We had stopped on a sandbar for lunch, and so they're running around with their shoes off, which was great. And she wrote, "If not now, then when?" And I was really taken back by that. I mean, she's 16 years old. She was obviously kind of parroting things she'd heard in the past, but it wasn't the same experience for me. That was a real clarity for me. If we're not going to do this now, then when are we going to get around to it? The river's there. It's our job to take care of it and to find ways to do that. If we can connect people through art, which I think we do, and in a really unique way, we're really happy to do that.
I guess I'm really curious about how art can do that in ways that other things can't. Like, I would think that the river cleanups and things like that you described would be such more direct approaches, but clearly there's something in the art approach that speaks to you and has been compelling for you.
It really has, and I think that there's a kind of a type of person that comes to a river cleanup. There's a type of person that goes to a festival, and then there's a type of person that comes to an art show. And when I was sitting just, in fact, I had just spoken to Don about that very thing at our last art show. There were people at that show we were not going to reach through a river cleanup. We were not going to reach them at a festival or through an education event. It was a different way to connect people. And with someone else's interpretation, I think that really gives you that broad view that then you kind of pick and choose your parts of to become involved in and to care about.
Don and Timothy, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that too, and then we'll get to our calls because we've got lots of them.
I think one thing that speaks to in terms of is the level of involvement that it takes. So there's one level of involvement if you go out and pick up trash on the river, but to actually be an artist like Tim is and embed yourself in a particular landscape, that requires a different level of involvement. And I think people, they respond to that and they understand it. And you can, you know, there's sort of innumerable stories that can be brought to the surface in bodies of water. And so it lends itself to many different approaches, and I think people really respond to that.
Yeah, I think there's a lot that can be done outside of being next to the rivers to kind of just get that perception up, and that's part of the reason I like to still make art objects about this. But the biggest thing for me, it's the biggest challenge and the best payoff is getting people to get out of their comfort zone and try to do this stuff and be like, no, really, we can go through this tunnel right now and there's not going to be any water, hasn't rained in 5 days, and you're going to be in complete darkness and you're going to hear an echo for 4 seconds and it's going to be really crazy, and then like let's climb through these invasive bushes and see where we pop out. And it's like that kind of adventure is kind of where I've gotten people to get involved.
It sounds like a real sense of wonder, like almost sort of like being a kid.
Yeah, people forget that you can always be a kid and that you can always explore. And just because it's a city and there's roads everywhere and like sidewalks that you can walk on doesn't mean you have to.
Let's talk to Jamie in Brooklyn. Hi, Jamie.
Hi.
What can you?
Hi, Jamie.
What can you share with us?
Hi, Tim. I'm just totally inspired by the discussion that's happening here about the river, and I really. You know, the idea that the river is a story-generating entity, you know, that it's interesting that I guess a lot of what I'm interested in is, you know, what makes Kansas City a unique place? And when you look if you're in a space station looking down at the Earth, you can spot Kansas City, Missouri, because it's where the Missouri River, the longest, you know, it's where the Missouri River stops going south and it turns east. And that's right where the Kansas River joins the Missouri River and it turns east. And I guess that, you know, that if you were to count the lower Mississippi as part of the Missouri River, because the Missouri River empties into the lower Mississippi, it's the longest river in the whole world.
Hey, Jamie, I want to jump in because I am familiar with who you are, and so are a couple of guests in the room, but I don't know if our listeners are. Can you tell our listeners the story of your exploration of the of bodies of water here in Kansas City?
I'm really, you know, I think that it's maybe part of the story of coming back to Kansas City's roots, coming back to Kansas City's downtown, like reimagining our city center, is that we have to figure out what the Missouri River in Kansas City means to us today.
But tell us about your project.
So, you know, I guess that I've done many projects that involve the river. In 2007, you know, I put out these pamphlets, and a group of people, some of whom had never met each other, came together and built a bicycle-powered paddle wheel raft out of recycled materials. And we went from Kansas, Caw Point, downtown Kansas City, till we tasted salt water.
And then you also traveled around the city with a canoe, which I was lucky enough to do with you one day. We walked with a canoe looking for water. You endured a lot of people stopping you and making fun of you and asking where you were going with that canoe in Kansas City, assuring them you would find some water. And we finally found the water department first, but eventually a fountain. Talk about that project for just a second. Why were you traveling Kansas City with a canoe on foot? It was very heavy.
I think that it's really exciting that we can tap into things that are always happening in the city. And one of them is that rivers, streams, creeks are flowing all throughout. So I would meet up with people often after work, and I'd meet them at their workplace, and we would figure a way to bike home. The idea was that we would have a canoe pulled by a bicycle, and we would kind of choose any direction in Kansas City at any point, and you'll find yourself eventually running into a creek. So, you know, that you can say that you're in Westport and you choose to go north, you'll find yourself at Brush Creek, which sure enough you can put a canoe into and follow that down the stream till it becomes more wild as it goes into the forest farther east. And then you'll find yourself at the Blue River. And then, you know, if you live in the northeast of Kansas City, you can take the Blue River until you're home. So that's like a kind of trip that you can take using the water as a transportation infrastructure.
Let's hear what our guests have to say about this.
I did that very trip with Jamie, and it was a huge inspiration for me and kind of drew me to realize this thing about the landscape, especially the Kansas City's landscape. But the first time I got to the Brush Creek and we got in, and I was like, oh, we're on a canoe. I just left the grid. I'm now on this other time scale. I'm at geologic time. I'm floating. Like, the city isn't really, I'm not in the city like I was just a second ago. And then even though you travel down in the Blue River, you're like in this crazy, weird post-industrial culvert wasteland. Like, it's still like you're in this strain, like there's just this time scale. And I've also just been greatly inspired by Jamie's suggestion of the kind of simple truths of water, that idea that got me going in the first place, that water just flows downhill. And if you walk downhill, you'll find water. And eventually, if you follow that water, you'll reach water that tastes like salt. And like, that simplicity of an idea has stayed with me since Jamie told me that initially. So
let's talk now with Kelly in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Kelly.
Hello, Gina.
What can you share?
Gina, what I was calling about is it feels like our waterways in Kansas City are a little more passive than I'd like.
for instance, I love water. I love looking at the water, but there's really not a lot to do in the water. So, for instance, it's not like a boating community. There's not like canoe rides that are given. And one thing that I really missed is the riverboat cruise, and I think that was a really great way to harness the water and get the average person out into and on the water, and I just don't see anything like that. I don't know if there's anything like that that I don't know about, but...
Well, yeah, let's find out.
It just feels passive.
It feels that way to you. Let's see what Vicky here says from the Healthy Rivers Partnership.
I think that there are things that have gone by the wayside. Certainly the tour boat river excursion has done that. But there are so many things happening on the river right now that I, as a person that works on the river, have seen. There are three things that bring people to the river in droves. One of them is a flood. Certainly, you see a lot of people watching water go by when there's lots of it. The second thing is a river cleanup and those festivals that we talked about. But the third is the longest flat water canoe race in the world, and that is the MR340. Goes Kansas City to St. Charles. It's a great opportunity to recreate on the river.
We actually did a story on that very thing. If you want to go find it at kcur.org, Central Standard is off to another break. You have just a few minutes left to share your experiences with Kansas City waterways. I'm Gina Kaufman. We'll be right back. And we're back. I'm Gina Kaufman here with scientist and artist Don Wilkeson, Vicky Richmond of the Healthy Rivers Partnership, and artist Timothy Amundsen, who's been exploring Turkey Creek through photography. Hi again, Don.
Hello.
Timothy, welcome back.
Hello.
And good morning to you, Vicky.
Thanks.
I want to get back to our callers, but one of our callers raised a question, which is how Kansas City's rivers make us identifiable from space or unique here on the ground on terra firma. And Timothy, would you like to take that one?
I think everybody would have an opinion on this, but I think that the great intersection of the Kaw and the Missouri was what made people arrive here in the first place. And the Kansas nation was here when Lewis and Clark arrived, and I'm sure before they were here, there were other people. I know there's ancient Indian mounds around downtown KCK and in the northeast. And the confluence of a river is a very important thing. It's if you're traveling on the river, it's your only intersection. And of course, rivers don't cross, they conjoin and split off. But I think both of the rivers connect very, like one goes, you know, all the way up to Montana and the other one goes way out into the prairie. So
I think the looking at it from a Landsat image is a perfect opportunity to not only focus on sort of a specific location like Kansas City and begin to understand it, but it also provides an opportunity to see sort of the wealth of connections that can and should be made and have been made. And I sort of see one thing that's kind of missing in the discussions about rivers is there are a lot of advocates for a lot of different things. Advocates for art on the river or infrastructure or highways, many different things, but there's not really a single advocate that just speaks for the river. And that's
the river as separate from its uses or human agendas.
Yes. And that's a huge thing to sort of tackle because there are so many sort of interests involved. But I think it's important that we do that. And we do that in many different ways. I think there's a lot of different approaches to do that. And we can argue about them. But I do think it's sort of important in the future of sustainability that we develop something like that.
Let's hear from some of our other callers. We've got Keith in Overland Park. Hi, Keith.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I just got off a hike and was driving back when I heard you guys on the radio, and I go out to the Mill Creek Trail in western Johnson County pretty regularly, and it's about a 15-mile one-way trip. I take my dog out to hike and just enjoy it, and this morning it goes by the creek and just looking down into it, I love to fish, but I also like to see the wildlife that are drawn in there and saw some neat birds this morning and often see deer and different things along the hikes. So it's very much a part of our community, and in a way, if you can get to it, and there are lots of options for that. I know Missouri has a lot of rivers that are you can float down, and somebody was saying, what do we have to offer here? A lot of things are available 3 to 5 hours southeast of here in the Ozarks that are gorgeous, and Kansas is a little more interesting that way with the different laws concerning waterways, but we have a lot to offer in the area.
What do you mean by Kansas's laws concerning waterways?
You have, I'm blanking out on the word right now, but basically land rights go to the middle of the stream. In Missouri, you can at least walk in the stream, even if the land's private on the riparian zone. So at Kansas border, that changes and have western water rights versus eastern water rights. So
I wonder if our guests can have any information on that or can clarify.
I didn't know that. That's news to me. That means that I've been doing a lot of trespassing.
the laws are different, and primarily has to do with the scarcity of the resource in large parts of Kansas, so where water is treated more as a first right. So
yeah.
And in Missouri, it's completely different. But there have been exceptions made. For instance, the Kansas River, which is a beautiful river. It's very close to get to. If you're sort of intimidated by the Missouri River, start with the Kansas. There's many access points to that. It's a great sort of boating river, and there's a lot of sandbars that you can sort of explore. And imagine that what's great about it is you can imagine that you're in a bigger river, because even though you're not at times, because the landscape is less manipulated in many ways than the Missouri River. The Missouri River is the landscape around it has been manipulated, at least in this stretch, and there are places where it's not as manipulated that Vicki might want to speak to that are really interesting.
Well, I think that there are so many opportunities for folks to get out on our rivers, whether they're doing that on their own, whether they're joining Healthy Rivers Partnership or Friends of the Cough or a float or a trip, whether they're coming out to the 340, there are lots of ways.
Let's talk to John in Shawnee. Hi, John.
Hello. I've called in a few times about the walking and the bicycling. And, I explore the Turkey Creek quite a bit. And I back in 2000, I started exploring the Kansas side on the river, on the Mill Creek passageway on the western side of Shawnee. And I agree with your guest on a lot of points. As you become more aware, and there are a lot of areas to explore, you just have to be more non-conventional about it.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have an experience with Turkey Creek?
Yes, I go down Turkey Creek quite a bit. I go exploring, and so you just got to be up for the challenge. It's not really that challenging. It's just that you have to be willing to go off the beaten path and do your own thing.
Yeah, I think he's got it right on. I mean, it's definitely what I'm engaging in is non-traditional time on the creek a lot of times, and I mean it can be pretty challenging sometimes. I've gotten to where I'm like, oh, there's nowhere to go but, you know, down this cliff. So
let's talk to Art in Kansas City. Hi, Art.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, how about you?
I'm doing fine. Interesting subject.
What can you share?
He was talking about Turkey Creek and the as it enters the Missouri, it's the mouth of the river. As the distant, like, Carl River is the mouth to mouth as it enters the Missouri River. And the channels of the river and different lakes in the west bottoms, it flooded. Well, it did flood per se, but man has entered that area, whereas it goes back to its natural course. And we have a heavy rain as we've been seeing lately.
All right. Thanks, Art. Any thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, as a hydrologist, I would say, I mean, we can try to do whatever we want to do to sort of protect ourselves from rivers. But my comment is that at some point, I don't care what you do, at some point they're going to flood. I mean, we've done a lot to sort of protect infrastructure that works, but then there's consequences associated with that. Anytime you're sort of, you know, disrupting a natural system in one way, there are other responses. But, you know, a flood is going to happen. It doesn't really matter how much money you spend, how you try to design it, because there's just so much about the river we don't really understand.
At the same time, seeing how the implements that have happened to Turkey Creek beginning, way back, and especially that big tunnel that was dug in 1918, and to kind of respond to his question, that's what interests me, is that the mouth of Turkey Creek is miles away from where it once was, and it's in a very unlikely place underneath a giant bluff. And so our influence on the landscape is a daily presence, and it's good to be aware of those things, and we should be going there to see it.
So much more I want to know about, but sadly our time is up for this discussion about noticing the water all around us in our what we think of as landlocked city. Timothy Amundsen of the Turkey Creek Institute for Phenomenal Awareness, thanks so much for joining us today. Vicki Richmond of Healthy Rivers Partnership, thanks for your time. Best of luck in your efforts.
Thanks. We're proud to be here.
And it's been great hearing the scientific perspective. Thanks so much for that, Don Wilkeson.
Thank you.
That's a wrap on Waterways for today, but KCUR's Beyond Our Borders project is now exploring the Missouri River as a dividing line, so you'll be hearing plenty more. You can also go to kcur.org to read a story about the vast range of art Kansas Cityans are making about the river. That's kcur.org. Tomorrow, I'm going to learn how to tie a bow tie, and we'll discuss men's fashion in Kansas City. Don't miss it. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stick around for Up to Date next.